Welcome to Baderson. We make up stories, improvised and recorded live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Mike, and my source is Beastie Boys Book by Michael Diamond and Adam Horovitz.
My name is Casey, and my source is a sheet music printing of the song Dear Eloise by Alan Clark, Tony Hicks, and Graham Nash.
My name is Drew, and my source is Envisioning Information by the legendary Edward R. Tufte.
All right, Drew is now going to draw a performer's name out of his hands.
Casey.
All right, I'm flipping to the only page of this text source.
That band is the Hollies. It took me all of this time to realize who sang Dear Eloise.
Oh, I don't even know the song. I'm impressed. Yeah, recorded by
the
Hollies.
You know Graham Nash, though.
On Epic Records, yes.
He's a member of the Hollies before he was a member of You Know What.
Okay.
Buffalo Springfield.
Close.
Here we go. You rushed in blindly. He treated you kindly.
All right,
rushed
that's
in
our
blindly.
Prompt.
He treated you kindly.
From Thank You, Eloise, by the Hollies.
Dear Eloise.
Dear Eloise.
Thank you, the Hollies.
Thank you
for that song.
Eloise. Love, Graham Nash. Welvin sprinted through the forest like his life depended on it.
He kicked open the door of the cabin and said, Jason, we need more salmon.
Jason whirled around from the counter and was in panic because he had just filleted the last salmon that they had.
Jason said to Welvin, listen, I'm pretty focused over here. And when you barge in like this, it really throws me off my game.
And Welvin said, that's fine. You can be focused. You know I need you focused and doing good work, but we got some people that are going to starve down by the lake if we don't get them enough salmon. And so whether you're focused or not is sort of beside the point.
And Jason said, okay, well, this is the last fillet. So if we need more salmon, we need to get it from the river.
Welvin said, I've been at the river. I don't know what you want from me.
Jason said, what I want, if you want more salmon from me, then I need more salmon from you. So that's what I want from you. So go back to the river and figure out where the salmon are and bring them back. And I'm happy to fillet them. I can't do everything around here if this camp is going to survive.
And Welvin was about to say something, and Jason said, I will calm the campers down. You just go to the river. And Welvin did. And Jason quickly jerkied up the salmon and brought it to the campers. And Sarah, the other counselor who was in charge of the 20 kids, passed out the jerky. And while the kids were occupied, Sarah and Jay got caught up on the lack of salmon from Jason.
And the reason why this was especially urgent is that Welvin was not exaggerating. The kids were at risk of starvation. The only entryway to the camp was through a tunnel that went under the mountain, and there had been a cave-in the previous month. There was no way to get supplies in, and there's no way for them to get out. So
they hadn't told the kids or the parents any of this.
And they had been subsisting on basically what they could forage from the land. And Sarah, Welvin, and Jason were desperately trying to keep these 20 kids alive.
The secret was starting to, you know, get a little bit hard to maintain after all this time. The kids had been told that they were transforming the camp into sort of a survivalist camp, that they were going to just see how well they could do. A lot of the kids were pretty excited about that at first, pretty on board with the idea, but, you know, they'd been eating nothing but salmon for the last 3 weeks, and it was starting to get a little curious. They were asking about calling their parents, asking why they were overstaying so much. One of them had another camp they were supposed to go to, and they had told them that well, that's your parents changed their mind and so on. The lie was straight
up,
a little
hard. They're straight up lying to the kids about everything. They're just concocting all these stories about why the camp activities are different, why they're not going home, why they can't communicate. They're just inventing things left and right to try to rationalize the situation.
And the three counselors are dealing with this in different ways. Welvin is in a pretty much constant state of panic. Jason tries to counter this by being focused and direct. And Sarah is trying to be as cheerful as possible to keep her own panic from breaking through the surface and to keep the kids from realizing that anything's wrong.
And she keeps trying to come up with...
Counterintuitively, Sarah was thinking, you know, this might actually be the night that we need to break this all down for the kids. Even though she'd been putting on the happiest face, she thought they had a right to know, and she also just realized it wasn't going to keep working forever.
She made a silent promise to herself that if Welvin didn't come back with any more salmon, that she was going to tell the kids whether the guys wanted her to or not.
And she, and in a similar a part of that plan, it was either Welvin comes back with salmon, or she had been working, normally they did archery just with targets, but for the last couple of weeks, she had been drilling a team, Abdul, Slisa, and Kevin, as her kind of her archery team. And they had been, they started practicing quiet movement, shooting at moving targets, and she was actually going to take them out and to try to hunt some game to try to diversify their diet a little bit. And so today is also actually the day that Sarah was going to try to get out and take down a deer or something along those lines to try to get them something other than salmon. And so she
at the river, Welvin is truly the wrong person to send because he's so worked up about this that he's very ineffective at catching salmon. He can see fins and tails, but he's diving in and trying to get him with his hands because he feels like he doesn't have time for a hook and a line. It's going to be faster if I can just grab them, but of course, he's not faster than a fish.
Jason, back at the cabin... Remind me where Jason was last time we saw Jason.
He'd walked down. He had taken the jerky down, but he went back to the cabin.
He went back to the cabin. And Jason
very calmly, he walked down, handed out some jerky, slapped some kids on the back, told a couple jokes, sang a camp song or two, and then moseyed back to the cabin.
He was in a different kind of panic. He was fearing for his own life, and although he would be ashamed to admit it, was starting to contemplate heading off on his own, just
going
abandoning
over
the entire camp, going over the mountains, just trying to save himself. Maybe a little bit of a story he's telling himself that he could bring help to for the others. But the truth was he was getting ready to bail. He felt like the kids were just going to slow him down, and he was terrified. He was scared he was going to perish in the woods.
So... Sarah gets Abdul and Slisa and Kevin together, and she separates them from the other campers. And these kids are tweens. This is a tween camp, so they're 9 to 12. And
there is a firm break at 12. If there's a teen in your age, you cannot go to a Grizzly Club survival camp.
And these are Abdul, Slisa, and Kevin are the kids who are, they're a little older, on the older side, and they're also a little bit more mature. And so Sarah's sort of felt like they're probably the ones who are going to be most likely to handle this hunting expedition. And so... they go out, they take their bows and arrows, and they head out into the woods, and things are going relatively well for a stretch. And they actually, it's like a miracle. Sarah cannot believe it. They go around the lake, and they're not even like 50, 100 feet off the lake on the opposite side, and they see a deer in a clearing. And they all sort of take positions around the clearing quietly. They creep around like they had talked about doing.
The kids, and, like, truly something comes over them. The hunger, they've been away from home for this long. It's like the generations back are like now coming through these bodies of these hungry, lonely kids and giving them the woodsy wiles that they need to be effective hunters. They're doing things that you can't teach, you know? It's like they've done this a million times.
And so it's very primal and it's very effective. And Sarah actually just kind of steps back because the kids are fall into this so naturally that she just is kind of watching them and is amazed. Kevin fires an arrow that goes right into the neck of this doe, a big doe. And the doe freaks out and charges directly at Abdul and leaps towards him and actually leaps at him and kicks into him, knocks him over, and he falls down and accidentally releases his arrow, which flies into Sleesa's arm. And then
Sleesa screams and collapses to the ground. The deer somehow runs off just into the woods. A little bit of blood here and there, but pretty much gone. Sleesa, right? Is writhing on the ground. Abdul perhaps has the wind knocked out of him. He's sort of struggling on the ground as well. And Sarah,
his nose is broken. His nose is broken. It's pointing sideways. There's blood all the way from nostrils to neck.
Sarah immediately begins to question all of her thinking that led up to this ill-fated expedition, and wonders if maybe the hunger that she's been feeling, because she had been eating much less food than the kids, had led to some poor decision making. And she runs over to try to attend to the injured.
And the kids deal with it pretty well. They panic less than her. Abdul even thinks it's sort of cool. And then she realizes that Kevin is not there. Kevin has given chase. Kevin is still possessed by the spirit of the hunt and is whooping and running after the doe, tracking sprinkles of blood on the leaves.
And so Sarah does some quick... She's a little possessed because all of a sudden the stakes have gotten raised even higher than these, you know, trapped, starving kids already.
Two kids injured right in front of her. One kid alone in the woods chasing an injured animal.
She grabs the arrow that is going through Sleesa's arm. She grabs the sharp end of the arrow, pulls the entire arrow through her arm.
And
disregarding everything she'd learned in first responder training.
But she's singing happy songs like she has been this whole time to try to, you know, lighten the mood and keep everyone up.
And in retrospect, she's like, I should have clipped off or like broken the arrow so there's only a small part of the shaft. But she was just had these like old Western movies in her head or whatever, and had these ideas. And she just in a moment thought, this is how it has to be done. And she's singing, kind of maniacally singing, you know, camp kids a lock a lock do that. She's singing the sort of camp song that's got a upbeat rhythm. And she just yanks the arrow through and Sleesa screams and passes out. And she bundles up her arm. She checks on Abdul and she's like, stay here. Keep an eye on Sleesa. Try to wake her up if you can. I gotta go get Kevin.
Sing. She gives him three songs.
His nose is bleeding. He's holding his nose and it's bleeding. And he sort of nods with big eyes. And Sarah charges.
He's a good kid. He's going to do what she says. It's only three songs and she's going to be gone for a while. He's going to keep singing those three songs over and over through his squash nose.
Back at the river, Welvin eventually kind of shocks himself. He does catch a fish with his hands. He gets one. And he starts screaming and jumping up and down. And as soon as he catches it, he's all excited and he kind of he's trying to figure out what to do with it, and he's holding his hand. He's like, oh, he forgot a bag or whatever, and he thinks, oh, I get shoot. All right, well, I guess I got to just take this one back. And he turns, and he sees a humongous black bear standing on the side of the river growling at him.
The bear's very interested in the fish that Welvin is holding, and they have a bit of a standoff. And now Welvin has heard that black bears are sometimes easily scared, and so he starts whooping and hollering and swinging the fish around. And
yelling, my fish! My fish!
Go, bear! Go! Go, bear!
And he has that typical, he has a typical thought process that, you know, basically everyone does in these moments where he's like, all right, am I supposed to make myself big and threatening? Am I supposed to roll up in a ball? Am I supposed to run or not run? He just can't.
He did eye contact, he show read, my back.
He read 40 web pages before he came to camp, and they all said something different, and he's mad at them now. But also, perhaps, judgment clouded by the hunger. Instead of just dropping the fish and running, he's possessed with this, like, there's no way I'm giving you this fish. He's mad at the bear. He's feeling an animalistic possessiveness.
The bear ultimately is going through a similar experience where the bear is trying to remember what his mom had taught him about contending with an equal size predator over a piece of food. Are you supposed to let it go and sneak attack, or confront
directly?
Never back
down.
You know, it couldn't remember if pride was a useful motivator or it makes you do dumb stuff. And so he's just sort of imitating Welvin note for note while he's trying to figure out, like, how far am I going to escalate this? What's my game here?
What's my move?
Eventually, it doesn't matter because instinct takes over for both of them. Welvin just turns and runs, keeping the fish. And
the bear has one thought, chase.
Yeah, that's all. The bear loses all capacity.
Now I know.
To rationalize.
I know. You don't have to tell me, Mom. This is 100%.
And Welvin's
sprinting alongside the river. There's a lot of, like, kind of thin vegetation and sandbars and stuff, so it's not too hard to run. The bear is obviously much more capable and much faster. And the bear is keeping up. The bear could catch Welvin. The bear is sort of pursuing with this chase instinct, but it's still kind of like, do I murder this thing? Do I just make it drop the fish? It's trying to do the calculation. It's not hard to keep up with this creature that's pretty clumsy and hopping over logs and stuff, but the bear also not good at running long distances, and so it's going to have to come to a decision pretty soon.
Back at the lake, Jason, who is just right on the edge of sneaking away and fleeing, he's gathered the kids around who are still at the lake, and everybody heard screaming from across the lake. They didn't realize what it was from, but it was a little distressing noise. Jason goes into ultra calm mode. He brings the kids around and he says, okay, let's take out our gratitude journals. And they had long since, there was no more, they had burned all the paper that they had. They had actually burned everybody's gratitude journals because they needed them to start fires.
The excuse was you have to let go
yeah, of your gratitude.
Right.
Yeah. But he still used this as a way to go through the motion. So they all sat down and mimicked the motion of opening up a gratitude journal and picking up a pencil and writing down the things that they were grateful for.
It was the practice that was important, not the paper.
Correct.
And he said
one
that
of
out
the
loud.
Kids was named Felix, and
actually two of the kids, but we're just looking at one of them right now.
Felix R.
Felix
is who we're,
and Big Felix, Felix and Big Felix.
Don't call Felix our little Felix.
No.
And Felix R throws up just sort of out of nowhere. And Felix R was the designated mushroom taster. They had been gathering mushrooms. Nobody knew anything about mushrooms. But part of the pretense was like, okay, we're gonna do this the old fashioned way. And so one of the kids and one of the counselors were just eating very small quantities of the mushrooms to figure out if they were toxic or not, or edible or not.
And so far, every single one of them had turned out to be toxic. They hadn't found one yet that hadn't caused a reaction.
But this was the most extreme reaction. Felix threw up and just looked a little green around the gills.
And threw up again. Like all the other positive tests for toxins were like a little like, heave. Yeah,
it was upset over fast. Stomach. You know, yeah. This was for real. He was ejecting the contents of his stomach. And all the campers sort of made a mental note. They remembered the mushroom that he'd eaten last. And
Big Felix, in his gratitude journal, said, I'm glad I wasn't the mushroom sampler. I'm grateful for that.
Everything got a little distracted from this this little ritual that Jason was kind of putting together. They were trying to clean up Felix. They were trying to make sure he was okay. And he seemed okay, but he was definitely like his eyes were a little spaced out a little bit. He was a little disconnected.
And Jason had two thoughts, the counselor Jason. I definitely need to go. Like, I can't be responsible for any, I can't watch any of this happen.
I am so
like
things out are of here.
But I have to, like, I can't leave them like this. I have to do one thing to try to make this better, and then I am out. So he said, I'm going to the cabin. Big Felix, continue, like, leading everyone who is not throwing up, keep writing in your journals. Big Felix, take care of little Felix and write in, sorry. Take care of Felix R. and write in his journal for him. I will be right back. And he went to the cabin and he made, out of the one first aid kit they had, he made as many individual first aid kits as he could, which was 8. And there were a total of 20 campers. 3 of them had gone off with Sarah. So there were 17 campers at the lake, and he brought 8 first aid kits and said, who's good at math? And
what's 17 divided by 8?
And Jant, a lady, a young mid-tween, said about 2. And so Jason said, okay, everybody buddy up. And then he said, oh, that's not going to work. There's 20 of you. I've got eight of these. 20 divided by 8. Jant, I don't need you to do this in front of me. Just figure out how many kids per first
aid
kit.
2.5, she said.
He's like, excellent. Sure. He's kind of trying to like, and he's just kind of pushing him into the middle of the circle. And he's like, okay, yeah, that sounds about right. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna hit the head. I will be right back. And he goes back to the cabin, grabs his rucksack, and heads for the pass. He just heads through the woods, heads through the pass.
Telling himself, I'm not a bad guy. I didn't take any first aid for myself.
Yeah. And I'm going to save these kids.
Yeah. And when I get out, the first thing I'm going to do is get some help back to these kids.
The trouble.
And if I told them, it would just create panic. It would make everything worse. So this is really best for everyone.
The trouble with his rationalization was that it was like a 2-week, like they had driven like for hours and hours on roads to get here. You know, he had no idea where he was going. It was going to take weeks for him to get to civilization and to get any sort of help. And he wouldn't even, you know, wasn't even confident that he'd be able to get there. It was a pretty big long shot, as opposed to the fact that everybody knew where the camp was, and him being there and helping the kids out was really what he should have been doing.
The other thing that was just gnawing at him was that he was the counselor who was the mushroom tester in partnership with Felix R. And he had figured out a couple mushrooms that were edible, that weren't toxic, that Felix R. hadn't had. And his backpack was stuffed with he had a sleeping bag and some canteens and a bunch of edible mushrooms, and he knew where to find more, and that was really gnawing at him.
Out in the woods, Kevin finds the quivering body of the doe, and he carves it to pieces. Kevin.
And they hadn't talked about this at all. He just intuitively takes out his Swiss Army knife and just carving out organs and just skinning
stacking
it
and slabs of meat and like singing a happy tune. Just like his favorite counselor. Sarah's
well, we rode together on the lake and the ding and the whip and the captain. <What?
laughs> Licking blood off his hands. He's eating raw meat and he's feeling better than he has in all his whole life, as far as he can remember. The bear makes a choice to catch up and immobilize the thing carrying the fish.
It decides it might be more trouble. If I try to kill this thing, that might provoke more of a reaction that's going to cause me more trouble, but I think I can neutralize it and still get to the fish without creating like a bigger conflict.
And if I don't come home with a fish, mom's going to be like, you're not sleeping in here tonight.
What use are you?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think what I'll do, I'll just give him a slap with the old paw. Just knock them down and see what comes
of that. I've seen these things. These things are pretty hardy. They seem to be able to... This seems like something I can just... This will be a mild...
We'll slow it down.
Imposition.
Throw it off its rhythm. It'll drop the fish and we'll go from there.
And so the bear, it slaps Welvin, which... And just... smashes the side of his face, tears it up with its claws, breaks his orbital bone and his cheek, and Welvin screams and goes flying to the ground, but does not let go of the fish, is desperately clinging to the fish.
Hugs it with both arms and like tucks his knees up together to protect the fish and is screaming. And now the bear is scared by what it did. And also, like, this is scarier than the show of defiance that Welvin put on when they first met.
Because this is like a real deep terror scream rather than a fearful,
It's act. It's not go bear. I'm my fish. It's no.
And the noise. It's. Before, the bear knew it was not speaking the same language as this creature, but in this moment, there's crossover between, the word doesn't make sense, but the meaning is entirely, completely clear.
The bear is not so much afraid as disturbed. It is like...
And the bear is not that hungry. The bear has been eating well. There's lots of salmon. And the bear is like, you know what? This is more trouble than it's worth.
There are other fish.
I'm out.
And it's like, you know, away confused. And it says, I think I'm just going to cruise down to the lake and see if I can find some.
I know perch. A spot.
There's a spot by the lake where sometimes there's some good perch and maybe some berries. And so it wanders down to the lake, and the kids are all sitting in a circle and the bear sort of, the bear's looking over its shoulder back at where Welvin was, is really still kind of reflecting on the moment and the noise. And just kind of, wow, that was really something. And doesn't realize it sort of wanders right into the circle of kids who are half dazed and very focused on their invisible gratitude journals. And the bear actually bumps into one of the kids. It's Gant. Jant bumps into Jant, and the kids flip. The kids scream.
They run. Everyone except for Felix R, who is too weak, and Felix R is alone with the bear. And the bear is like, "Okay,
here we go again."
Felix R is holding a first aid kit. The bear is like all of a sudden wants the first aid kit.
It doesn't know why.
But he can smell some very interesting things in there.
And says, I don't have time for another chase. I don't want it. And I don't want any howling. And so the bear just claws out Felix R's throat and kills him. And the kids had like fled. The other kids had fled to like a sort of safe perimeter, and then they wanted to see what happened. And then seeing this, they scattered and screamed even more. And the bear's like, "Ah, this is just what I was trying to avoid. The one I swiped is silent, but all the others are doing the thing.
That noise, that infernal noise, that haunting noise."
And the bear like jumps into the lake just to get away from it.
Sarah comes up on Kevin and Kevin's covered in blood. He's got all this dismembered deer parts well organized and categorized. And she says, "Oh, wow. Hey, Kevin, great job." And she's just like, "Oh my gosh, great. This is wonderful. Let's stack this up. Let's carry as much back and we'll come back and get as much as we can." And Kevin turns on her and his eyes are really wild. And, he says, "Oh, Sarah, we're not going back. This is how we live. This is what it's all about. This is
you and me, Sarah.
You and me, Sarah. We don't need to go back. We can live out here and do this.
This is day one." And he writes "day one" in deer blood on her face. And she isn't going to go anywhere. She is too scared. And so she, well, at least for the moment, she feels like she's going to hunt him down. So she she makes him a sandwich out of the deer meat and dirt. And they do this sort of husband and wife routine. She's trying to make him comfortable and make him believe that she's in this too. Like she just, that it just playing into the, yeah.
Right? She indulges the fantasy while she tries to figure out what to do. Jason's tromping along. He's looking at his compass. He's looking around, and he hears a noise behind him, and he turns around, and it's Big Felix. Comes out of the woods, and says, "Jason, what's going on? What are you doing?" And Jason says, "Oh, I was just looking for some more mushrooms. Just looking for some more mushrooms. What's
there aren't any mushrooms up here, Jason."
Also, Felix R is dead.
You're not going to believe what just happened down at the lake.
We were kind of hoping one of the counselors could come, like, help us fight this bear or just sort of bring us back to sanity, because we're down one camper right now.
So
it's really fitting that Big Felix is the one who found Jason, because of all the campers, he's the one that copied his style and is like finding a, right. a calm way of dealing with crisis.
Jason would, you know, the counselors would talk, they would admit to one another who their favorite campers were. and Big Felix was definitely Jason's favorite camper for this very reason. He saw a lot of himself in him. And so he says, "Okay, tell you what, Big Felix, I'm going to level with you. I'm getting the hell out of here. And
you should come with me.
Why don't you come with me?"
Yeah. And then and Felix says, "Wait a minute, like, why? I mean, I know that there's a lot happening, but why can't you call someone, or like, why are you going this way, the tunnels this way? I have so many questions." And
Jason breaks it all down for him. Yeah. He confesses everything, tells him everything.
Been lying to you for weeks.
He starts weeping. He starts crying. Like it's the first time he's sort of spoken honestly with the kids. And there's something about the innocence and the naivete touches him. And it also reveals to him his own dishonesty in the moment. And he gets to a very fragile emotional place.
And Big Felix breaks up with him. In that moment, I mean, the Jason's breakdown is affecting a little bit, but more than that, Big Felix is hurt by the dishonesty, and he says, "No, I'm not going with you. You can chicken out if you want, but I'm gonna stick it out with my team." And he goes back and rounds up the campers and brings them to the cabin, while Jason is still sobbing and dealing with his demons.
They dig a shallow grave for Felix R. and invent a little ceremony.
Put one of the poisonous mushrooms on the grave.
And the across the lake, things have gotten very uncomfortable for Sarah. She's trying to figure out how to sort of bring Kevin back, but he just keeps going deeper in, and he's got this whole, you know, he's in this part of the woods. He's like, "And this is our living room here, and we'll have the bathroom over here, and then I don't know, what do you think, like one bedroom or two bedrooms?" And this is just like, there's so many red flags going off for Sarah about the inappropriateness of this, but she feels like Kevin is just like descending deeper and deeper into this state, and she can't figure out how to reel him back. And
she hears a rustling coming from the trees, and she recognizes the sound of a heavy breathing animal, and a dripping wet bear, the bear, comes out of the bushes.
Just comes the upon air the sea. Reeking, just can smell this dead deer from, had been able to smell it even underwater from the swim across the lake.
And the bear takes in the scene and is just like, "Oh my God, what? Why can't I just find some normal prey around here?" And starts to do the evaluation all over again. All right, we got
who's
two
the bigger
of them.
Threat?
Yeah, there's a big pile of.
But it's having a really hard meat. Time. I mean, having a hard time because there's this huge bloody mass of deer meat that is really.
He's been chasing that doe.
Judgment.
He'd been after that doe. He recognized the doe, but it was, barely. But and one of them's covered in blood, which makes him look pretty menacing. But he's pretty small and.
And once again, the decision is taken out of his hand. Kevin sees the bear, grabs his Swiss Army knife, and just, like, screams. And that terrible scream, and the bear just starts cringing. It's just another one of these noises. And charges at the bear with the Swiss Army knife extended.
Stabs it right in the eye.
Stabs the bear in the eye. The bear is taken aback, and the scream really defected. Stabs the bear in the eye, but immediately the bear... just clamps, right. it smashes it with the claws, clamps its jaws around Kevin's head, kills him instantly.
Pops it like
pulls him
grape.
To pieces like fucking pulled pork right in front of Sarah. And she remembers that you are not supposed to run away from a black bear.
She's pretty sure that that was the takeaway from training.
And so she makes herself watch all of it.
You're not supposed to turn your back even. That's like the biggest thing.
Yeah, don't make eye contact. Don't turn your back. Don't run. So she just focuses on Kevin being torn to pieces. Images that will never not haunt her.
And she feels a little guilty because there's 5% of her. Things were getting so weird with Kevin that 5% of her is a little relieved because this was actually a way out. I mean, 95% of her is horrified and disgusted and immensely disturbed, but she can't ignore that there's this little bit of her that feels kind of glad.
Right. Jant was her favorite camper, but she was starting to turn and be like, "Well, you know, if we're never going to get out of here, this is probably the best partner I could have in Kevin, who's clearly capable." But now that dream is ripped to shreds right along with Kevin's body. and the bear finishes its business, but it wants the deer meat. And so Sarah tosses hunks of it to the bear and the bear's
like, "Huh."
And like, the bear,
she's,
like...
she's not afraid. She's definitely standing her ground. She's puffed out like her shirt she to try to I can't seem see bigger, any of her even back. Though it's obviously that she's not actually that much bigger.
She's not running.
And now she's throwing the meat at me.
This feels okay.
I'm all right with this. And the bear just starts to eat the meat and kind of keep one eye on the one remaining eye on her.
And kind of looks around and feels like this is kind of a nice environment. It looks like there's sort of a sitting area. And I then could, that could
I,
be a
I
bedroom.
I get comfortable here.
Right. They're clearly like the bear had seen fires before and saw that where one could go, where one was, where some sticks had been set up. And the bear kind of snapped its claws and pointed at the pile of sticks, and Sarah got the message and, you know, rubbed them together and warmed the bear's feet with a nice little campfire.
Now, Weldon finally got himself together and stood up. He, a whole side of his face totally bloodied and smashed in, still had the fish, and made his way back to the lakeside where he thought the kids were supposed to be. They weren't there. He saw a little shallow mound there that had a mushroom on top of it. Didn't have time to explore that. Walked back up to the cabin, opened the cabin door, and most of the kids were in there. Just sitting on the floor, sitting in chairs, staring off into space.
Some of them crying, some of them shaking a little bit. Some of them just sort of numb.
And, he said, Weldon says, hey, good news. He holds up the salmon.
Got one.
The kids.
The kids hardly react. They look up and they're additionally horrified to see the condition of his face. And one of the kids, Marianne was her name, in a small voice just says, "What the hell is going on around here, actually?"
And Weldon's like, "Oh, nothing. Just gotta fillet this salmon." And oh, hey, Jant, can I borrow that? He points to the first aid kit, and
then he just falls. He just passes out and falls onto the ground. Collides, just smashes his face into the ground. The fish is on the ground. The kids are kind of like all looking at each other and looking down at him.
Big Felix. As the calmest of them and the one who came back and organized them is the de facto leader. So he sets into motion this plan for filleting the fish evenly and cooking it on the little camp stove that's in there and tying up Weldon against a post of the cabin because they don't trust the counselors anymore. He has told all the kids what he learned from Jason. Cave in, trapped, all is lost. And they don't quite, you know, that Marianne was like, "What's going on?" They still wanted to hear it from the counselors who, in many campers' minds, still held authority. But they had been told by Big Felix what.
Now just Felix.
Yes. and Abdul and who?
Slisa.
Slisa is awake, and they see a fire, and so it's dark.
And they'd heard some disturbing noises, so they
back where they thought the lake and the campers were.
And towards where the fire was as well.
That's true. There was a disturbing noise that came from there.
And some extended disturbing noises.
It went on for
noises.
A while.
And so they each notch an arrow as they silently creep through the woods towards the fire.
And who are they again? It's Abdul and who?
Slisa.
She's got a bad arm.
Mm-hmm. She's powering through, though.
Oh yeah,
and they
and he's got a bad nose, also powering through.
They're both pretty scared. They got a hair trigger, and they've got their full draw on their arrows, and they're just sort of like creeping through the woods. And Abdul is drawing a bead on some movement that he sees in the bushes, and Sarah, unbeknownst to him, sort of like moves a fern frond, and Abdul just has a reaction and releases an arrow again, another accidental arrow release and arrow right into the thorax of Sarah.
And yeah, this is two in one day, so he feels really bad when he realizes what's going on. He's like, "Oh my god!"
His arrow hit his friend, right?
Hits Lisa.
Yeah.
So he sort of freaks out, but this happened right when they came upon this scene. So he's really disturbed by the fact that he just killed his favorite counselor, even though he wasn't her favorite camper.
They had a talk about it.
he knew that the odds were stacked against him just numerically, but it still hurt a little bit to find out. But he and Sleesa are really disturbed by what they see when the dust sort of settles in this moment.
There's a lot to be disturbed by in this particular clearing.
There's a bear who's sitting in kind of a makeshift Barca lounger.
Yeah. I was going to say papasan, but yeah.
With its bear paws up, and it's got a drink in its hand and it's in its paw.
Yeah, it's hard to see. So what is that drink exactly? It's not a coconut.
No, it's not a coconut.
Or a beer can or a bottle.
It's the bladder of the deer.
That's
wrapped,
what it is.
Wrapped around Kevin's pelvis.
So the bladder's like a cozy?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's keeping the fluid in. There's two piles of different looking meat next to the bear's recliner, and Sarah's dressed a little differently. She has like she's got an apron that is made out of shrub. You know, there's kind of like a leafy shrub. She has an apron on
and has got an empty bee's nest on the end of a stick, not dissimilar to a duster.
The bear sees these two strangers comes in and is just like, well, that's one thing after another today, isn't it? And just murders
just when,
both of them.
Just when I started to settle down and things were making sense.
Yeah. I was real, and this relationship was really feeling very promising. Yeah.
Out of anger for the loss of Sarah, and also just like the bear just has a real bloodlust going now, just murders the two of them right there on the spot. And kind of abandons the scene. Go ahead.
I can never remember their names, but who's Abdul's friend?
Sleesa.
Sleesa sees that scene for what it is, a heteronormative disaster. An interspecies
1950s style,
and she, and with her dying look into the bear's eyes is a look of such scorn and disappointment that it leaves a mark. Although the girl dies, and the bear the bear is now three murders into this and one broken face.
Three and a half, yeah.
Felix, four. Let's call it four.
Oh, four. Felix, yeah. Forgot about Felix.
Four and a broken face.
Rest in power.
The kids did not.
It finally feels like too much. That look penetrates the bear's one eye, penetrates the soul through the bear's one eye, and.
And the bear just takes off. It's like I'm.
It mopes.
It feels like throwing up. What'd you say?
It mopes. It just it
yeah.
Walks without smelling, without seeing. It drifts like a feather on a breeze.
Jason. Big Felix.
Jason returns to the cabin, and starts to say, "I'm sorry, we failed you, but I believe." And then the campers pounce on him and tie him up to another post. And Big Felix says, "Yeah, we're all sorry." And Jason can't talk now. He's got a gag. And Big Felix squats down and looks into the eyes of his ex-favorite counselor and says, "I'd say you're not in charge anymore, but I don't think you ever were." And then he stands up and says, "Campers, let's find our way out of here."
The end.
Baderson Stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content, for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at Baderson.com. And remember, when you meet a story in the woods, give it a big old hug, because that's a friend for life.